Hello, and welcome to Great Loop Radio, brought to you by America's Great Loop Cruisers Association. We're dedicated to sharing Great Loop information and inspiration with those actively cruising, planning for, or dreaming about a Great Loop adventure. This is Kim Russo, the director of AGLCA. My guests today are two of our very popular rendezvous speakers. Betsy and Rick Johnson are both with us, and they are going to give us some information on tackling the river system, which is exactly what they have presented about several times. So I know you're in for a great episode today. Before we get started, I just want to take a moment, as I always do, and recognize and thank our Admiral sponsors who support AGLCA at the highest level. They are Curtis Stokes and Associates, Dog River Marina, Passage Maker Trawler Fest, Skipper Bob Publications, United Yacht Sales of the Carolinas, and Waterway Guide Media. So as always, we encourage you to support these businesses that support the Great Loop. And just to let everyone out there know, I know sometimes the audio is not as strong as it could be on these podcasts. Please know that we record this by phone since the guests are generally all over the country and most of them are actively cruising at the time. So we deal with a lot of cell phones. So we've got Betsy and Rick, and I think they're sounding okay. But just know we're doing the best we can with the audio quality and looking at ways to improve it. All right. Well, Betsy and Rick, thank you for being here with me.
You're welcome. Glad to be here.
Let's start out, for those of you who don't know Betsy and Rick, Rick, maybe you can start by just telling us a little bit about your Loop experience.
Well, we actually did the Loop in 2009-2010. We did it in a 26-foot Glacier Bay catamaran. It was a boat smaller than most people, but as I always tell people, it's the one I had title to, so that's the one I used. We had a great trip. Yeah, we had a great trip. We had a little dog with us, the Beamer dog. We met lots of great folks. We stayed in lots of great places. And we tended to not anchor out. We tended to be on shore every night, mostly for the dog. But also we enjoyed the camaraderie and the cocktails and the going to the restaurants and all that. So we had a fabulous time. And I guess we know that because we continue to go to rendezvous and do talks and stuff like that. So we kind of... we're a little loopy, that's all I can tell you.
Well, we're glad you're a little loopy because we enjoy having you back at the rendezvous. Tell us how you really, in addition to looping, but what made you gather all this really detailed information that you are willing to share on the river systems? How did you gain the experience you felt like you needed?
We're fortunate enough to travel on the legendary Delta Queen on numerous occasions, up and down the Mississippi River, and we just fell in love with the rivers. We live on the East Coast, and so traveling on the Delta Queen and then later on the river barge, the River Explorer, up and down the rivers, we just fell in love with the rivers, and we're very excited to be able to do that portion of the loop on our own boat. And a lot of people dread the rivers. They think they're boring. They're worried about the strong currents and things, but we really love the rivers and think they are one of the most beautiful parts of the loop, especially the Tennessee River, but the Mississippi and the Illinois and the Ohio as well are just beautiful, beautiful part of our country's heartland.
Well, it's nice to hear you say that you enjoy the rivers, because we do hear from a lot of people who are not familiar with the river system and are feeling a little bit intimidated, particularly by the barges and tows. So tell us about that. Tell us what we need to know to safely navigate the river in light of the barges and tows. And maybe start by explaining to people what we mean when we say barges and tows.
Okay. On the rivers, unlike the Atlantic Intercoastal Waterway or the canals up in Canada, the rivers of the Western rivers are all working rivers, which means they have barges and working boats on them all the time. A barge is just a great big rectangular vessel pushed by a towboat. Usually they're about 300 feet long. That would be one barge. That's the length of a football field. They carry wood chips, grain, fuel, all kinds of stuff up and down the river. Now, the barges can be 2 and 3 long. They can be wide. In fact, in the Mississippi River, it's not unusual to see one towboat pushing 25 or 30 barges. So they can get quite big. They're huge, actually. There's two problems with them. Well, not a problem, but when you go through a lock, and you go through several locks on the Illinois River and the Mississippi, they have priority.
So if they're big, they may actually have to be split into parts to go through the lock. They have to put one part through and then put another part through. So it's possible that when you get to a lock, just at the time the barge does and he gets to go first, you may wait 4 or 5 hours in some cases. Now, I will say that when we did it, our longest wait was 2 hours. We have heard of people waiting 5 or 6, but that wasn't our experience. But the barges, like I said, do have priority. Now, another thing to consider is when you're dealing with barges is you should never pass a barge without first contacting them and making sure an agreement with the barge operator as to which side you're supposed to pass on. They see things up and down the river that you don't see. They may see a bend or a bridge or something that you don't even see yet, and they may say, no, you don't want to pass now. What? Give me 15 minutes, let me get past this curve. So know your ones and twos, which is the way they describe to you. If you call them, they'll say, pass me on the one or two. You make sure you understand that and get agreement with them before you pass them. They are huge, huge, huge things, and you got to stay out of their way because they have faucet. Do not pass them too close because they suck a lot of water up as they go, and they actually have been in the past, and this is not to scare anybody, but if you get really, really too close to them, they could just pull your boat right in next to them, and I guess it's possible to even swamp your boat, but we've never actually heard of that happening in truth, but they really do pull a lot of water.
Can you or Betsy explain the one and the two? Because that's something that a lot of people are not familiar with if they haven't boated that part of the country. And when we first publicized that this was our topic this week, I got a few emails from people saying, please make sure you cover the one and the two because I'm confused. So, and I know you two have a good system for that. So go ahead and share that with us, please.
Yes, this is Betsy talking, and I have explained this at numerous rendezvous. And the way that it was explained to me after me not understanding it for quite some time, and Rick and I are very experienced boaters. We both have our 100-ton license. But the way that it was explained to me that made me understand it, and this will be a reminder to some of the people that have seen us at the rendezvous, you picture standing in front of you an analog clock. And on an analog clock, you have a 1 for the 1 o'clock hour, and over on the other side of the clock, you have an 11 for the 11 o'clock hour, but you picture that as being 2 1s. And so if the towboat tells you to come around him on the 1, just picture that clock and veer your boat in the direction of the 1. And if he says, come around me on the 2, you turn your boat in the direction of the 2. And we tell people, don't even think about port and starboard. Don't even use those words because it becomes confusing as to whether you're passing a barge or whether you're meeting a barge head on. Are you passing him port to starboard or starboard to port? Don't even worry about that. Veer your boat in the direction of the 1 on that analog clock or in the direction of the 2, whatever he says. And actually what we did, and this works just as well, on your helm station, put little stickers. Put a 1 on the right-hand side of your helm station and put a 2 on the left-hand side of your helm station. And that way you can never go wrong. If the towboat says, please come around me on the 1, you veer your boat in the direction of that 1. And if he says, come around me on the 2, you veer your boat in the direction of that 2. And again, that works whether you are overtaking or whether you are meeting him head on.
That's great advice. Yeah, go ahead.
I'll just add to that one thing. Make sure that you've got agreement with them. Call them on the radio. Ask them which way you want to pass. And if they say, I don't care, then just pick one. But just make sure that both of you know. Yeah, tell him. Make sure that both of you know which way you're going to come because, again, they know the river way better than you do. And they know, for instance, if you think you're going to go on the 1 and he knows it's shallow over there, he can stop you. So don't go around any barge either overtaking or meeting head-on unless you have agreement with them as to which way to go. Now, I'll add one more little small thing here. This pertains to the whole trip. Somewhere up the upper Illinois River, you need to get with 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 other boats, and y'all need to form a little flotilla down the Illinois River, down the Mississippi River, all the way to Green Turtle Bay. Part of the reason, you get a bunch of you together, a barge comes up, the first one calls up to him and says which way you want to pass, and he says on the 1. All of you pass on the 1, trucks just keep like a little caravan, and then when the last one goes by, call them and say, all right, we're through, we're all passed, thank you very much. This also aids you at the locks. If five or six of you are sitting there waiting, you got a good chance of the lock master opening the lock to let you through. If only one of you sitting there, you may be there for a while. So form a little pack and go and use the one basically off to your right, two is off to your left, and you won't go wrong.
I'll make one more comment, Kim, if we have time. We have found that the towboat drivers really love talking to the ladies on the radio. And so we always recommend that as you're coming down the rivers or even as you're calling drawbridges anywhere along the way, let the woman do the talking. And if she can put on a real strong southern accent like I have naturally, I don't have to put it on, but if you can put on a good strong southern accent, they really like that, and they will be very, very talkative and friendly. They will treat you the way you treat them.
Perfect. Great advice. Let's move on then to charts. What charts or guidebooks do you two recommend for navigating the river system?
Well, the first thing that you have to have is the Skipper Bob book from Chicago to Mobile. It is absolutely indispensable. It's only $16, but you just absolutely have to have it. The other chart books are available. You can just Google online Illinois River charts or Mississippi River charts, and you can get some charts from the Corps of Engineers and the Army that you can download just selected pages. They're coming PDF, and I'm not going to try to give you those addresses because they're great big long. You can get them. This is another reason why you need to be with a pack of people. You don't need a lot of charts. You're only going 400 miles here from Chicago to Hoppies. It's only 400 miles, and you're at a river that's relatively narrow, which is the Illinois. You don't need greatly detailed charts. I mean, what you got is great, and you know, the more you got is probably better, but you can get these anywhere. You can also buy these charts from the Great Loop people at the ship store, or Landfall Navigation has them. But I will tell you, many of these charts are 10 and 12 and 15 years old. There have been no changes in many, many years. So if you get them from somebody else or download them, you're just as good. But you absolutely have to have the Skipper Bob one. And I'll just mention right now another reason why you have to have that. We don't talk a lot in our talks about where to anchor out. The Skipper Bob gives you all the places to anchor, and in some pages there are 8 or 9 places on one page. So there are many oxbows and places to anchor on the Illinois River, not so much on the Mississippi. If you have the Skipper Bob, you can pull into any of these places that they've already been researched, and I consider it to be the one Skipper Bob book that you have to have. It's called Chicago to Mobile, and I think it's $16.
Okay. Let's touch just for a minute on Asian carp, because that's another thing that people hear about and wonder how they should deal with the Asian carp. And there's not too much you can do with them, but what should people expect as they're on the rivers,
well,
and we know that the Asian carp are out there?
Well, the Asian carp crisis is over. The electric fence at the Lockport Lock right out of Chicago is operational. You go through it, you just have to go through it like any other lock and be careful, because that's part's done. They're no longer charging you $600 to go through and all that. That was passed. However, where you get the deal with the Asian carp is once you get past that electric fence and into the Illinois River, your rudder and your motors will stir them up, and they'll jump in the river behind you or behind the barge or anything like that. They don't hurt you. You can hear them bumping into your hull. They will jump into your dinghy. They are very thin-skinned animals, and when they jump, they hurt themselves, they split themselves open, and they get blood everywhere. Now, so that's the big deal with Asian carp, is not that they are a nuisance anymore, it's just that if they get in your dinghy, you're going to have a mess, and they do a lot of – they're fantastic, and I understand there are some chefs who are starting to make meals out of them, but the crisis of them, which was several years ago, and they were charging people to go through the carp trap and all that, That is over with. There is no more crisis there.
Okay. And probably the last thing maybe we should touch on before we get to the different ports along the way is the currents, because everyone is heading to that area from the Great Lakes where they're not really dealing with any current at all. So what happens when they get into the river system? Is there anything to look out for as far as those currents go?
Well, the current on the Illinois River is only 1 to 3 miles an hour. I always use miles an hour because that's the way the towboats do and all that. They don't understand the term knots at all. 1 to 3 on the Illinois, 3 to 5 on the Mississippi until the Illinois, until the Missouri kicks in. Once the Missouri kicks in, which is right after we're going to that far today, the current in the lower Mississippi, getting down to the Ohio River, is as much as 13 miles an hour. 8, 9, 10, 13, all those are certainly capable. We've traveled with trawlers that got in the current and what's caught radios and say, my boat has never been this fast before. You just have to understand the good news is the current's with you. It's pushing you,
exactly.
Not pushing against it. And of course, when you turn off the Mississippi up into the Ohio, which we're going to do later on, you immediately lose 6 or 7 miles an hour just over in a flick of a finger, because now that current is against you and you're not getting all that push anymore. It was easy for us, just as an example. We left Hoppy's and went to Cape Girardeau. It was 111 miles. We left at 7 in the morning, and at 4 in the afternoon, we were all tied up, everything, 111 miles in one day, and it was easy. So the current really, not much in the Illinois, a little more in the Mississippi, and then once the Missouri comes in, that's when it's the fastest, and once you turn up into Ohio, you lose all that advantage.
And Rick really just answered. Sure, go ahead, Betsy.
I was just going to interject one thing because I don't want us to forget this. Rick mentioned about talking in terms of miles per hour and miles. You're talking in terms of statute miles. Any time that you're on the river, so you don't say, I'm going to come around you at 10 or 15 knots. You talk in terms of miles per hour. And when a towboat says there's something, you know, some distance up ahead, be aware that he is talking in terms of statute miles and not nautical miles. And then the other thing that I wanted to make sure we didn't forget is when you're on the rivers, you never talk in terms of I'm heading north or I am heading south. You always speak in terms of upbound and downbound, and most of the time you will be going downbound. Seems like you're going south, but maybe not. There may have been a bend in the river that you're actually heading north, even though you are going downbound. So anytime that you're talking to the tows or anybody else, as a matter of fact, you want to talk in terms of I'm heading downbound. Not I'm heading south or north, because if you look at the charts, you know, you can be heading east and think you're heading south, but still you're always heading downbound.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? When you talk about where something is located on the rivers, you talk about the left descending bank or the right descending bank. So those are terms that people need to be familiar with as well.
Okay, good. We're going to pause right there for a minute and hear a message from one of our sponsors. When we come back, we will start to talk about the specific ports of call that you'll find along the way once you leave Chicago. So back in a moment.
Stay connected to your boat service tech online. Try MyTasket. MyTasket is the number one online task sharing and service coordination tool for boat owners. Accessible from a smartphone, tablet, or computer, MyTasket is your direct line of communication to your boat service yard. No back-and-forth phoning, faxing, or emailing needed. You can even upload photos or videos of what you need done. Take better care of your boat, save time, and minimize frustration. You'll receive automated maintenance reminders, and you'll have a direct line of communication to your service professionals. Need service work done? Just task it to your service tech. MyTasket is free for boat owners and includes up to 1 gigabyte of storage. Try it today at www.mytasket.com.
And we're back with Betsy and Rick Johnson, who are filling us in on what we need to know to navigate the Western rivers along the Great Loop. So Rick and Betsy, let's assume that all of the loopers are on their way and are coming through Chicago. Let's kind of pick up from when they leave Chicago and tell us what the ports along the way will be.
Okay, I can gladly do that. Before I get in, let me just mention one other thing that's crucial on this area, weather.
Mm-hmm.
You need to pay attention to the weather. You are in the heartland of America. Afternoon storms and thunderstorms are always possible. But also, you know, around St. Louis and that area, there are a lot of tornadoes and all. And, again, this isn't to scare anybody. It's just to let you know that you need to pay attention to the weather, watch the overnight forecast, watch this. And sometimes you may have to wait in a place a day or two or three If you do, that's just part of the deal. Remember, you only got 400 miles to go here, we're talking about, and there's no need to rush it, no need to certainly put yourself in any harm. But just pay attention because it does rain, and it does blow, and it does fog, and sometimes you have to just wait. So now we'll get to the ports.
Okay.
You're leaving Chicago. You leave Chicago. You're going to go through the Lockport lock and the carp fence no matter how you go. If you come through the Calsag or the Chicago River, it doesn't matter. You're going to go to – and I'll mention here, you are committed. Once you leave Chicago, you must go to at least to Joliet, Illinois, because there is no place for you to stop before that. And Joliet is like 3 miles past the Lockport Lock. So it's there are several walls there to stop. Just you can tie up. There's some restaurants there and all. Pretty nice stop. Moving on down, you're going to go through some more lock. And I'm not going to mention every single lock and dam. But, again, every one of these, if you're in a group of three or four, before you untie, for instance, at Joliet, you and your friend should get together and call the Brandon Lock, which is 2 miles down the way, and ask him, do you have tows waiting? Can we come along? Tell us when to come. And he may say, don't show up till 10 o'clock and I'll get you through. Then there's no need of you untying at 7 in the morning if you can't get through the lock at till 10. So just that's another thing, reason to stay in a pack. You go through some locks. The first real place that you just absolutely have to stop is called Heritage Harbor. Heritage Harbor is at mile 242 of the Illinois River. It is a fabulous place. They love loopers. They have courtesy cars. They are 3 miles from the town of Ottawa, Illinois. They have a great game room, food, fuel, gas, whatever you need. They don't have service. They just have fuel. But it is a spectacular place, great floating docks. It's a place you might want to spend some time, particularly if there's any bad weather, get in there. The town of Ottawa is 3 miles away, and it has three spaces on a town dock that are free. And unlike most of these places, they actually have water and power at these docks. No Wi-Fi, no cable. But they are free. They only have three spaces, so you have to kind of get there and just get you tied up. But the town of Ottawa is a great place. It's very historic. As you move on down, the town of Chillicothe has a free dock. On past that, another 20 miles is the Ivy Club in Peoria, Illinois. It has couple of restaurants on site, a restaurant across the way, very protected. It's behind a wall. Ivy Club, great stop.
And just to jump in for a second, Rick, the Ivy Club just became a sponsor of AGLCA, so we appreciate their sponsorship and definitely a place to stop on your way.
Yeah, it's a nice place. The Ivy stands for Illinois Valley Yacht Club, by the way. You move on down to mile 120, you'll see tall timbers. That can be a little skinny to get into if the water's low. But if you get in there, we just talked to some people yesterday who have stayed there several times, and they say that the amenities are very nice, the people are very nice, but just know that if it's really low tide or if the river's really low, you may have some difficulty getting in there. Four feet is it gets to 4 feet there, and some people can't make that. Moving on down, there's the town of Beardstown. They have a city dock, but depending on the river, whether it's there or not, it has a tendency, if the water's too high, to get covered up and you can't even tie there. But your alternative, and this is probably one of those Huck Finn things, is to call the Logston Tow Company, which is right there in Beardstown, and tie up to a barge or a tow for the night, like Huck would have done, and just enjoy the river, let it go past you, and the sunsets are spectacular, and he charges a buck a foot. And it's just kind of different to think that you're tied up to a barge. And
I just want to comment on Beardstown. We bypassed Tall Timbers and went straight to Beardstown, expecting to stay at the city dock that we had read about. Actually, when we got there, the water was so low that there was no dock there. They had removed the dock because there was no water there. And so we were stuck staying at the Logston Tow Company, and I would count that as being one of the highlights of our entire trip. I absolutely loved tying up to that barge, talking to the guys that were working there. Once they closed up for the night, I went over and sat on the back of a towboat and watched the sunset, and it was an incredible experience. There have been some comments on the forum recently about people that stayed there that kind of got rocked around by wakes and stuff like that, but that wasn't our experience, and we just think that was a great stop. Beardstown's a great town.
Okay, great. What comes next?
We did Beardstown. Now you're going to go to, this is a very interesting fact, at mile 61 of the Illinois River, you will pass the westernmost point of the loop. No marker there or anything, you just have to kind of know, but it's at mile 61.3.
Just look on your chart.
Look on your chart, and you'll see it, you'll know it. Then there's Hardin. In the town of Hardin, the River Dock Restaurant has always allowed people to tie up as long as you would go in and eat with them. Well, unfortunately, this spring, the River Dock Restaurant burned, and it is no longer operating, but the docks are still available. And, by the way, all these places I'm telling you are in that Skipper Bob. They're all annotated and tell you exactly whether they're on the right descending bank or the left descending bank and everything about them. That's why you need that Skipper Bob. And the next place after that is the beginning of the Illinois River. You are at Grafton Marina, Grafton, Illinois, which is the confluence of the Mississippi River and the Illinois River. Grafton is a great spot. You've read about it probably 100 times in the news. When they have huge floods in the Mississippi, it gets flooded. But the downtown has like 9 wine tasting shops, and if you're a wine connoisseur, this is your place. They have a Percy car. Last time I was there, it was a BMW convertible. And you can go to the restaurants, and it's just a great spot. I want to also mention right here at Grafton, this is where the Mississippi River meets the Illinois. If you're having any kind of trouble with your boat, mechanical, something needs to be fixed, particularly if it has to be pulled out of the water, if you go up the Mississippi River 2 miles, just turn up and go right, there is a big marina up there that can do all kinds of work. They have certified mechanics. They can lift you out. They can do everything you need. If you don't do that, let's say you're having trouble with your props or something, the next stop to get you fixed is 350 miles away. So if you're having any trouble, you need to go to Port Charles and get that fixed before you head down the river, because you have now reached the Mississippi River. Okay. Kim, you're at the confluence of the Mississippi. Do you have anything to say yet there?
No, I think actually we're going to have to hold it there because we're starting to run late on time. We didn't get quite as far as we hoped, but I think that's okay. I think we're still ahead of the loopers who are on that route. They're still working their way towards Chicago. So if you're willing, we can work on scheduling at your convenience to get you back on and take us the rest of the way down the river, if that works for you. I know you're getting ready to travel, so we'll see what we can work out.
We can do that.
I just wanted to make a couple of real quick things that we wanted to make
sure we got in.
Alton is Illinois. It would be your next stop after Grafton. It's only a few miles, but it's 20 miles. But we think that both of those cities are worth a stop. You definitely want to stop at Grafton. You definitely want to stop at Alton. Don't miss the museum at Alton. And then we did talk with Fern Hopkins today at Hoppy's to make sure that everything was good there. And she said that the river will...
She said,
come on down, and she's doing fine, and Hoppy's doing fine, and she said, give them a day or two notice before you get there. And we'll be glad to talk with you again, but I wanted to get those things in real quickly that, you know, after Grafton, you would definitely go to Alton, and then Hoppy's, we talked to Fern, and everything's good with her, so, yeah.
Great. Okay. Well, and since we're kind of talking about that, let's just go ahead and real quick kind of for those who may have not experienced it before, let's talk a little bit about Hoppy's and Fern.
Okay. Hoppy's is on the Mississippi River. It's at mile 158.5. It is nothing but a collection of barges that are tied together, and you go over and tie upside to a barge. The lady that's running it is named Fern Hopkins, and her husband is Hoppy, Mr. Hopkins. They've been there forever. They're both well into their 80s. They are river classics. They know the river like the back of their hand. They've lived on it all their life. Fern will every day give you at 4 o'clock or 4:30, whichever she decides, a talk about the people that are there. She'll get them gathered on the dock and explain to them the next bunch of part of the river, what's high, what's low, where you can tie up, where you can anchor. She is a wealth of information. It is also the last gas stop for 250 miles,
It's a must stop.
A, for the ambience, if that's the right word, for Fern, but also for fuel. And a walk into town is very, very pleasant. The town of Kimswick is where it's actually located. It's a cute little town. And but Ferns is, if you don't go to Ferns, if you don't go to Hoppy's, you've missed part of the trip. You've missed part of the whole deal of the loop.
Experience with the loop.
Absolutely. Fern and Hoppy's are kind of looper institutions. And Fern is actually a Skipper Bob Award winner from a few years back because of all the help that she has given to loopers. So we definitely appreciate them, and that's why I wanted to take a minute and make sure that we covered them a little bit. Any final things before we wrap up? That's you, Rick.
No, just let us know when you want to keep going. We'll start next time at Alton Marine and go to Green Turtle whenever you want to do that.
Okay, sounds perfect. I will get with you on scheduling that. And for everyone who's been listening, we appreciate you listening. Tune in next time. If it's not Betsy and Rick continuing, then we'll get them the week after, but they will be back shortly. So thank you all so much for listening. Have a great week.
All right. Thank you.